Ekatra Foundation presents the Ekatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome, Deep Divers. Mm-hmm. Today, we're diving into a name everyone knows or thinks they know, Marie Curie. Mm-hmm. You know, the headlines, first woman Nobel winner, first person, only person really to win in two different sciences, physics, chemistry, just this icon.
A legend, absolutely.
But what if that legend, that kind of almost saintly image we have, what if that's only scratching the surface?
Right.
What if the actual person, Marie Curie, the real complex, struggling human being, is actually even more inspiring?
That's exactly what we want to explore.
We're using Susan Quinn's amazing biography, Marie Curie, A Life, as our guide today. It promises to take us way beyond that polished myth.
It really does. Quinn gets into the personal letters, the journals, stuff earlier accounts just didn't have access to or maybe didn't focus on.
So it's not just the science hero story.
Yeah. No, it's about humanizing her, seeing the vulnerabilities, the struggles, the frankly immense human cost behind those incredible breakthroughs.
And the context too, right? The world she lived in.
Precisely. Quinn helps us see that maybe her greatest achievement wasn't just discovering radium, but her sheer ability to persist, to excel in a world basically designed to keep women out of serious science.
Her genius forged in those challenges.
Exactly. That's the core of it.
Okay, so let's trace that journey. To really get her, we need to start right at the beginning. Maria Skłodowska, Warsaw.
Yeah, born in 1867 in Warsaw, Poland, but under Russian occupation. A really tough environment.
How did that shape her early on?
Well, her family was key. Her father, Woody So, taught math and physics. He instilled this deep love for learning, but also, critically, a strong sense of Polish identity that was vital under Russian rule.
And there was loss early on, too, wasn't there?
Yes, sadly. Quinn points out she lost her mother to tuberculosis and one of her sisters, too. These early losses probably contributed to her sort of stoic nature, that intense focus she had later. It wasn't just personal grief. It was tied into this larger national struggle.
And even then, she was already pushing boundaries. Tell us about this floating university. It sounds fascinating.
Oh, it really is. It was basically a secret underground education network, a way for Poles, especially women who were officially barred from university, to get higher education.
So, like, defiance through learning.
Exactly. It was resistance. Marie's involvement shows that early spark, that defiance, that incredible curiosity, and this belief that knowledge itself was a kind of freedom, really set the stage for her later tenacity.
Okay, so this determined young woman makes her way to Paris in 1891, student life, but not the romantic version we might imagine.
Oh, not at all. Quinn paints a really grim picture, extreme poverty, living in a tiny, cold attic room.
A garret, right?
Yeah, a garret. Surviving on bread and tea. Apparently, she sometimes actually fainted from hunger during lectures. It's hard to even picture.
Wow.
But Quinn suggests this hardship actually shaped her focus, leading to what she calls Marie's scientific asceticism. Like, she found satisfaction purely in the learning, the intellectual pursuit itself, almost ignoring the physical discomfort.
Just power through it.
Totally. And despite everything, she graduated top of her class in physics and maths. This is an incredible drive.
And then, amidst all this hardship and intense study, she meets Pierre Curie. How did that happen? How did it change things?
It was a game changer, truly. It wasn't just romance, though, that developed through their shared passion for science. Quinn calls it a union of two minds.
A real partnership.
A very rare one. Pierre was already an established physicist, you know, doing important work. But he immediately saw Marie's brilliance, her potential for original research. He treated her as an equal, a collaborator. That was huge for the time.
So their courtship was basically talking science.
Pretty much. You can see it in their letters. He deeply valued her ideas from the start. It wasn't like she was just his assistant. It was a true synergy. They achieved together what neither might have done alone.
And what they achieved, it changed the world. Let's talk about radioactivity, the word she actually coined.
Right. For her doctorate, she decided to investigate these strange rays Becquerel had discovered coming from uranium.
What was so special about her approach?
Her methodology. She used this sensitive electrometer developed by Pierre and his brother to make really precise quantitative measurements. This led her to a radical idea, that the radiation wasn't from molecules interacting, but came from the atom itself, an intrinsic property.
That's a huge conceptual leap.
Massive. And that insight kicked off their search for other elements that might be doing the same thing.
Which led to finding polonium and radium. But the work itself.
Yeah.
Quinn describes it as just backbreaking, doesn't she?
Oh, unbelievably so. years of intense physical labor. They were processing tons of pitchblende ore, boiling it, chemically separating tiny fractions.
In that famous shed, right?
Yeah, this leaky, drafty, unheated shed. Imagine stirring huge vats of boiling chemicals with this giant iron rod day after day. It was brutal, primitive work, almost unimaginable by today's lab standards.
It's such a powerful image.
Yeah.
And all that effort leads to the 1903 Nobel Prize in Physics, shared with Pierre and Becquerel. But even that wasn't straightforward for her.
No, it wasn't. This really hits on the issue of recognition for women. Initially, Marie wasn't even included in the Nobel nomination.
Seriously, after all that work.
Seriously. It was only because Pierre absolutely insisted, refused the prize unless she was included, that she shared it.
Wow.
And then, Quinn points out, the sudden fame was actually disruptive. They hated the public attention. It took them away from their research. And the tragic irony is, they were already starting to feel the physical effects of radiation exposure, though nobody fully understood the dangers yet.
The very thing making them famous was harming them.
Yeah. It's incredibly sobering.
Then comes 1906, and just unimaginable tragedy. Pierre's sudden death in a street accident. How did she possibly cope with losing not just her husband, but her closest scientific partner?
Quinn uses Marie's own diary entries to show just how profound, how shattering that grief was. She wrote something like, "Pierre sleeps his last sleep. It is the end of everything, everything, everything." Just heartbreaking.
Utterly.
But, and this is what's so remarkable about her, she somehow transformed that grief. She took action. She accepted the offer to take over Pierre's professorship at the Sorbonne.
Which made her the first woman professor there ever.
In its entire 650-year history, yes. A huge symbolic step. So while losing Pierre was personally devastating, Quinn argues it sort of, paradoxically maybe, forced her to step fully into her own light as an independent scientific authority.
The lab became her refuge.
It seems so. Quinn suggests she found the rigor of the laboratory was the only thing that could counteract that overwhelming sorrow. It was her way forward, continuing their shared work.
But life wasn't done throwing challenges at her. This brings us to something often glossed over, the Langevin affair in 1911. This sounds really rough.
It was incredibly brutal. She had an affair with Paul Langevin, another brilliant physicist, but he was married, though estranged, when some private letters were leaked to the press. Oh, it was a firestorm.
What kind of attacks did she face?
Vicious ones. Xenophobic, calling her a foreigner, even after nearly two decades in France. Anti-Semitic slurs, even though she wasn't Jewish. She was painted as this dangerous outsider, a homewrecker. It was a targeted, nasty campaign.
And this is happening just as she's reaching another career peak.
Exactly. That's the insane part. Right in the middle of this public scandal, she's awarded her second Nobel Prize, this time in chemistry, for isolating cure radium, the first person ever to win in two different sciences.
What did she do? Did she hide away?
No way. The Nobel Committee apparently even hinted maybe she shouldn't come to Stockholm because of the scandal, but she refused. She went.
Good for her.
And in her acceptance speech, she made this powerful statement, basically affirming, and I'm paraphrasing, that the chemical work, isolating radium, that was her work, belonging to chemistry. It was this incredible act of defiance, claiming her individual achievement right in the face of all that prejudice.
Wow, just refusing to be erased or defined by the scandal.
Absolutely, standing her ground.
And even after all that personal turmoil, her focus on science for humanity didn't waver. World War I breaks out, and she finds a way to contribute directly, doesn't she, with the Petites Curies.
Yes, this really shows her practical humanitarian side. She developed mobile X-ray units, essentially trucks equipped with X-ray machines.
Little Curies.
Exactly. And she didn't just design them. She learned to drive, went right to the front lines, trained medics, and worked with her daughter Irene, helping surgeons locate bullets and shrapnel in wounded soldiers.
Literally applying her science on the battlefield.
Yes, saving lives. It was a direct translation of her knowledge into helping people, showing that her scientific drive was always connected to a deeper human purpose.
So after the war, what were her later years like? She became this sort of scientific stateswoman.
Very much so. She established the Radium Institute in Paris, which is now the Curie Institute, still doing vital research. She even traveled to the U.S. on fundraising tours, treated like a major celebrity, all to get resources for science.
But there's that tragic irony hanging over it all.
There is. Decades of working closely with radioactive materials without understanding the long-term dangers took their toll. Her health steadily declined.
From the very elements she discovered.
Yes. She died in 1934 from a plastic anemia, almost certainly caused by her long-term radiation exposure. Her legacy is immense, the science. The inspiration is a pioneering woman, but it came at the ultimate personal cost.
Looking back at this incredible, complex life Quinn portrays, what would you say were the core beliefs, the driving philosophy behind Marie Curie? What kept her going?
Quinn really helps distill a few key things. First, just sheer persistent dedication. It wasn't only about being brilliant, though she clearly was. It was this almost superhuman capacity for persistence, you know?
Like that quote about life not being easy.
Exactly. Life is not easy for any of us, but what of that? We must have perseverance and, above all, confidence in ourselves. She truly lived that. She believed scientific truth was worth any sacrifice. Think of the poverty, the shed that's dedication.
And navigating the scientific world as a woman must have required a specific approach.
Absolutely. The second theme is navigating gender and scientific authority. She faced constant exclusion, condescension, outright hostility sometimes. Her strategy wasn't really to fight it head on with arguments, but as Quinn shows, to let the impeccable quality of her work speak for itself. Maintain dignity, stay focused.
Which relates to that third point about science itself, doesn't it? The altruism.
Yes, science as a pure and altruistic pursuit. The Curies famously refused to patent the process for isolating radium. They could have been incredibly wealthy.
Why didn't they? Today, patents often fund more research.
That's true, and you could argue that. But their view, as Quinn makes clear, was firm. Radium was an element. It belonged to everyone for the betterment of humanity. It wasn't for personal enrichment. It really speaks to their integrity, I think.
It is.
And fourth, you just can't ignore the physical and emotional costs of discovery. From the student days starving in a garret to the chronic illness from radiation, she seemed almost indifferent to material comfort. That quote, "I have no dress except the one I wear every day," it says it all. Science first.
So understanding all these struggles, these costs, is actually more valuable than just this sanitized myth.
Quinn argues powerfully that, yes, understanding the flawed, complex, struggling human is far more valuable and ultimately more inspiring than clinging to some perfect, unattainable legend.
Her life really does feel like it pivoted dramatically at certain key moments. If you had to pick three pivotal turning points based on Quinn's account, what would they be?
Okay, three key moments. First, definitely meeting Pierre Curie. It wasn't just finding love, it was finding that perfect intellectual partner. His belief in her, his willingness to collaborate as an equal, truly launched her into world-changing research. It created this unique synergy.
Transformed her path.
Completely. Second, has to be Pierre's sudden death in 1906. Devastating, personally, of course. But it forced her to stand entirely on her own scientifically. Taking his professorship, continuing the research, leading the Radium Institute later, it solidified her as an independent force. Her grief was immense, but the lab became her way through it.
A crucible moment.
Definitely. And the third, I think it's that intense period around 1911, the Langevin affair, hitting at the same time as her second Nobel Prize.
Yeah, that juxtaposition is wild.
It really tested her to the limit. Public humiliation, xenophobia, misogyny, right alongside the absolute peak of her individual scientific recognition, her defiance, going to Stockholm, asserting her own work in her speech. That was a critical moment of self-definition under extreme pressure. She refused to be diminished.
Thinking about everything she went through, the poverty, the losses, the prejudice, the scandals, the physical toll. What are the human lessons we can draw from her life today? How does her story resonate now?
Oh, immensely. First, there's the sheer power of having a purpose. Her deep commitment to science gave her incredible resilience. When you have something that meaningful, you can endure almost anything.
Find that why.
Exactly. Second, a lesson in perseverance against systemic barriers. She didn't wait for the world to become fair. She basically outworked and outsmarted the obstacles through sheer excellence. Her work became undeniable. It's a powerful model.
Definitely.
Third, how she managed to transform grief into action. Losing Pierre could have destroyed her, but she channeled that energy into continuing their legacy, building institutions. It shows how purpose can be a way to navigate profound loss.
That's incredibly inspiring.
Fourth, the importance of true collaborative partnerships. Their marriage wasn't just romantic. It was built on mutual respect, shared goals, complementary skills. It shows what's possible when partners genuinely support each other's potential.
Especially important given the era.
Absolutely. And finally, her approach to dealing with public criticism. That idea, be less curious about people and more curious about ideas. Focusing on the work, maintaining integrity, not getting dragged down by personal attacks. That feels incredibly relevant today, doesn't it?
It really, really does. Okay, this has been such a rich deep dive. To bring it all home, let's crystallize three final takeaways from Marie Curie's life and Quinn's portrayal.
All right. First, an emotional insight. I think the most powerful thing Quinn gives us is the complete human being behind the icon. We see the passion, the love, the intense grief, the fierce determination, the anger even. She wasn't some cold, detached scientist. She felt everything deeply. Understanding that emotional depth, the personal cost, makes her achievements feel even more real and, frankly, more moving.
Far from that secular saint image.
Miles away. Second, an intellectual insight. Her story shows that genius isn't just some abstract quality you're born with. It's forged. It's shaped by your background being Polish under occupation mattered, by your relationships Pierre was crucial, by your character that tenacity was essential, by your choices. Her scientific brilliance can't be separated from who she was as a person in all her complexity.
It's all interconnected.
Exactly. And third, a universal insight. Ultimately, extraordinary achievement seems to require blending that intellectual ability with really strong character. Persistence, courage, integrity, resilience. It's not just about having the great idea. It's about the ability to sustain the effort through failure, through criticism, through personal tragedy. That's what sets apart people like Marie Curie who make a lasting impact. That capacity to just keep going.
What an incredible story. Susan Quinn's biography really does peel back the layers. It makes you appreciate Marie Curie, not just as a scientist, but is this incredibly resilient, complex, and inspiring human being.
It truly does.
So here's a thought for you, our listeners. As you face your own challenges, big or small, think about Marie Curie's approach. She famously said we should see things not as something to be feared, but only to be understood. What might change for you if you brought that kind of fearless curiosity, that relentless dedication to something in your own life, something to ponder? Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We really hope you'll check out Susan Quinn's Marie Curie, A Life. It's a phenomenal read. Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.